Hey Wallace, did you see we got retweeted by Hobart?
No, I didn't see that at all.
The clip that I posted of you saying about Elizabeth Dillon.
Yeah. Is that
nice?
Recently it got retweeted, or what, way back when it was released?
It was like a few days ago.
Oh,
and
damn.
Like Moo Moo House liked it. Elizabeth Dillon liked it.
Wow. Oh, damn.
We're getting pulled into the dark side.
No, that's awesome. I mean, I was kind of hoping something like that might happen, actually.
August might turn on us.
Yeah.
Are you part of the anti-Hobart club, August?
It's not a strong position. It's not a strong anti-Hobart position. But because, you know, I know Steph edits there, and my friend Stephen Ark also, I think he does stuff there.
I haven't heard from Stephen in a while. I took one of his workshops.
Oh, you did? Oh, how was that?
It was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, he's a homie. Back in the Boston days, he used to come to my house for readings. I talked to him a couple months ago. We, like, randomly will talk on Facebook chat sometimes. But, yeah, he's doing all right. But I'm not strongly anti-Hobart. I'm just, like, sometimes you just have, like, petty reasons to hate a thing, you know?
I feel like I think if Paul was in here, you could side with – you would have a stronger stance on anti-Hobart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he'd be on your same page for sure.
Yeah,
I think he'd be more strident.
Yeah, where is he?
I texted him, and he should be coming.
Oh, he's coming. Okay.
There he is right now. We'll ask his opinion when he jumps in.
Nice. We don't have to do the hope because, like, we already talked about it on the other one that we run.
Hey Paul, how do you feel about Elizabeth Allen and Hobart?
Paul, how were your holidays?
They're great. They're great. Merry Hobart to everyone.
Yeah.
Merry Hobart. Happy Hobart.
We all love Hobart here. Especially Paul.
I'm already on the record on this.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. We already talked about this at great length in the 3-hour episode. Probably buried about 95 minutes into it.
Tyler just wants me to take Wallace to the woodshed for being a Hobart fanboy.
Well, Augie was kind of backed up against the corner because Tyler and I were saying, yeah, we're fine with Hobart. And then Augie, you know, he had some issues. And so it was like, Paul needs to join to kind of like even the score.
So how do you guys feel about
demurring.
Aaron Birch? I like
about
Aaron.
What?
Aaron Birch?
I barely know who that is. That's the other
He runs HAD. Yeah, he divorced Elizabeth Ellen. He started HAD. And Wallace was talking. I think Wallace and I talked about it off podcast.
Hmm.
Yeah, I probably regret mentioning him by name. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, Hobart's better than the other Aaron Birch's thing or whatever. I shouldn't have said that. There's no reason for me to. Actually, he's been very kind to me. I published a poem in a journal he ran. I don't think he still does it, called, like, Words in Sports. It was, like, a sports-oriented literary journal.
Yeah.
And I had a little poem about golfing, and he ran it. And he, like, gave me edits and stuff, and we went back and forth. And he was super nice guy. I don't know why I, like, called him out specifically, because, like, every interaction – I do, like, personally, I view him as more on, like, the kind of academic, like, university writer kind of side of the equation, which is not what I like, but he seems like an awesome dude. I don't have any issues with him at all.
Yeah, he just seems to love short stories, and he's been in the game for, like, 20, 30 years.
Well, I think he's, like – isn't he, like, a creative writing professor or something?
Yeah, I guess, but I wouldn't, like – I don't see him as, like, an academic guy, because he's so online. He started Hobart. He runs HAD. He's like in the mix. He like, yeah.
Someone had a good point about, doesn't HAD, don't they do a thing where it's like, they do like their submissions are only open randomly for 24 hours?
Yeah, but see, that's what me and Wallace were kind of going on about. Like, I really like that because it's so different, and he just does whatever the fuck he wants. He doesn't give a shit. And it's almost like subverting the submission process of every literary magazine, and he's just fucking around. And Wallace was kind of saying it feels like a carnival game, like you have to play these games to be able to get into the magazine.
I can
see that perspective.
Yeah, it just rewards the people who are the most on Twitter.
Well, yeah, which is going to be writers. I mean, writers like it because they follow it and it's exciting, and then they get their entry in. You know, they play the lottery before the window closes or whatever. It's very game show-ish.
Paul
has
his hand raised.
No, sorry.
Oh.
I was just holding my microphone in an experimental way.
Okay. are you how sick are you?
I'm drinking Mountain Dew.
I think that'll heal you.
I'm drinking Cherry Coke.
Do you have the flu?
I don't know. I got all this gunk, all this junk in my face.
Is this me too.
Like green gunk. They call me the gunk man.
I'm
are you
gunked
like,
up, dude.
Are you snowed in?
It's not too snowy. It's snowing, but it's really cold. It's fucking freezing, but it's the snow is not so heavy.
Damn. I'm gunked up too. Is Wallace the only healthy person here? You feeling good,
wow.
Wallace?
Yeah, I'm feeling great actually. Wow. I just got back from a little trip. I just went to California, so I got. Yeah, it was nice weather too. We got a lot of sunshine.
You look sun-kissed.
Well, I was out in the sun. We were actually on the beach, but not like it wasn't like laying out on the beach, like walks along the beach. It was like it was like 68 degrees or something like that. It wasn't.
That's
like,
still great.
No, it was great. But,
well, that's lovely. Yeah.
But I wasn't like laying out sunbathing or anything like that or swimming.
No. Yeah. Well, I'm jealous. That sounds great.
It was cool.
I was up in Michigan. Just like the opposite of California in many ways.
But that's like so I think we've been over this, Augie, but is that Upper Peninsula or not?
Yeah, Upper Peninsula.
It is. Okay,
yeah.
So everybody says that's like incredible, like one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Yeah, it's beautiful for like 2 months of the year. It's like June, July, it's like rocking up there. It's fantastic. Yeah. I there was a tweet going around where this guy was like, there's like all these pictures of the Upper Peninsula, these very beautiful sort of picturesque images of the cliffs and the dunes and everything, all the forests. And he's like, buy land in the Upper Peninsula right now. And then everyone was replying, it's like, yeah, it's cool, until you realize like 9 months of the year it is gray skies and massive snow piles and it's like 95% white and very economically depressed. So cool to visit, I guess, is the point. Go in the Michigan June summer. Yes.
August, what are those mixtapes? Or those tapes above you?
Just cassettes. Just my cassette collection, of which I've almost filled up this grid of this like 100 slots. I'm at.
Are
like
they
80.
Random? Are they randomly ordered? Or are they like alphabetical?
They're kind of like by genre. So this is relevant. I have 5 tapes by this group called De Youpers, which is like a novelty comedy group from the 90s from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Oh. This one is called Camp Fever. It's got such songs as Beer Run, Deer Hunter's Widow, Deer Hunting Son of a Gun. So that's among my collection.
Comedy albums, man. That's I when I was a kid, like a teenager, I loved comedy albums. In fact, specifically the Adam Sandler one was a big part of my teenage years. You know, the first one he put out.
Is that like a stand-up? It's like a stand-up.
No,
album?
It's like sketches and skits and things. And to this day, I still have like a saying from that from those. It stayed with me my whole life, and I repeat it to myself sometimes. Like he said. There's a whole sketch where he's like a goat, and he's Paul, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
I can't even remember. I think he's like the joke is that the goat is like being sexually abused by its owner or something like that. I think I don't.
That
remember.
Would make sense.
But the goat frequently will say like "fuck me in the goat ass," as an exclamation like "fuck me," but like he adds the "in the goat ass" thing, and so whenever I'm thinking like "oh fuck me." I always think, like, fuck me in the goat ass, you know, like,
man,
like a Sandler, like brainworm, you know.
Did you buy Did you buy the Tenacious D comedy album, like the first one?
I did not.
Oh, okay. I feel like the goat thing's like, that's very 90s.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Adam Sandler comedy is pretty 90s.
Yeah.
Fuck me in the goat ass.
What about you, Paul? What comedy albums have you, music/comedy albums have you picked up?
I definitely picked up the Adam Sandler record that Wallace is talking about, and I listen to it sometimes still today. I really like the cult. There's the one where the guy joins a cult. It's like a darkness cult. It's really good. Like he wants to join the cult because he wants to fuck a girl in the cult, and the other guy's like, I want to join some creepy cult, and then like they end up being like brainwashed by the cult. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm trying to think. I feel like there is another comedy record that I was heavy into, but I can't remember it now. This is a really out of the blue question, even by lo-fi lit standards.
That's true. What about you, August? Well, you already explained. You've already gone over that.
Yeah, I don't really. I mean, those are just like.
What's the best? Like, what's the best comedy album you guys have ever? Do you? Is it? We already went over this right now.
Comedy album.
I don't even know. Like, I've gathered you all here, and I don't really have a good reason.
Yeah, I didn't know either. Is this a reading, or are we just? Is this a chit chat?
I guess it's a chit chat. I guess I've completely forgotten the whole point.
I'm really sleepy.
Like,
today.
You guys, I know you guys all know each other, and you guys all like to talk. I was like, I just wanted to have a good time and bring everyone on here.
No, I'm excited to do. I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
Like, now what are we going to talk about? We've all gathered here.
Yeah. You came so underprepared. You didn't even, like, bring a list of
I know. I've been
topics?
Sick, man. I was like, what am I going to talk about? I see all these lists on Twitter of people, like, reading books already and, like, what books they've already read in 2025. I don't have any books. I only played video game. I played, like, a video game.
I just finished,
what have you guys been?
On the plane on my travels, just on the plane solely, I read entire submission by Michelle Hollebach, or however you pronounce it. Has anybody read that?
No. Wait, what's it called?
Submission.
No, I have not. Did you like it?
I did. Yeah. Are you guys familiar with him as a writer?
No.
But I've never read anything. But I feel like I'm increasingly hearing more about. Like, I've heard about him for a long time, and now it feels like he's having a moment or something.
Yeah, he's been around for a while. I think that book came out maybe like 10 years ago or something like that, maybe more. Mm. I think he has a new book out called Annihilation right now that is sort of maybe people like it. He's he's an interesting guy. I might be mispronouncing his name. I think people say it like Hollebach kind of, or like Hollebeck. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce it.
Welbeck.
Welbeck? Is that
Welbeck?
I think so.
Welbeck.
That sounds right.
I've heard it said that way, but I don't know.
So he's French. He's French. His name's like Michel Welbeck, and I think his writing is kind of known for its like cultural commentary a lot, you know. Mm. Submissions is specifically about like the near future of France, where the Muslim Brotherhood sort of like wins a contested election, and they sort of form a unity government with a kind of left wing party, but it's led by like a Muslim Brotherhood candidate, and essentially like France becomes increasingly like Islamic over the course of the book. And it's from the perspective of a university professor who part of the new regime is like turning all the universities into like Islamic compliant universities. So essentially like firing professors who don't convert but rewarding professors who do convert like lavishly, you know, guys who were sort of like middling college professors convert. If they'll convert to Islam, they become like fabulously wealthy, and they get like multiple wives, because like the Saudis are funding. The idea is like the Saudis are like putting a ton of money into this initiative to like make France more Islamic.
Wow.
And so the professor who is the narrator has like a choice of whether he wants to. He can retire and take a pension, or he can basically like convert to Islam and be like, you know, lavishly rewarded with like professional gain and financial gain and given wives, young wives and things like that. It's pretty wild.
Damn.
Yeah.
But he's got to do all the Islam stuff.
Well, I mean, like, it's not, they don't all you, it's, it can be like a pretty token conversion. Like, it doesn't have to start like doing everything, but he has to like go to the mosque and like, you know, I guess there's like a, like there's words you have to say that formally convert you to Islam. So you have to go do the whole ceremony and everything. And he's like, you know, he's not really religious, but he's from a Catholic background, but religion's not really an important part of his life. So he's a little indifferent to the whole thing. You know, he's also like super cynical about everything. Yeah.
Damn.
How do you feel about that ball?
How do you feel about that ball?
Oh. Sounds pretty reactionary to me.
Well, that's how he's often kind of like, that's the criticism of him, is that he's sort of that way.
I mean, it sounds like it could be very funny. It sounds like it could also be terrible. So it's with that kind of thing, with that edgy stuff, it's always like execution. Sometimes it's like the
it's
best
well
ever.
Executed. He's smart. It's not like a thing where, you know, he's a really smart writer. I mean, I think anybody reading it, anybody on this discussion reading it would, whether you sort of like it or not, I think you'd agree that it's like well done. It's fairly short.
How long is it?
It's maybe like 200 pages or something. It's like a slim novel.
Would you do it? Would you convert if you were in this position?
I would hope I would not. I would hope my sort of like principles would be sufficient. I'd stick by them, but.
Snell's kind of chill. I don't know. I'm not just saying I would, but it's on the table.
Yeah.
No, I'm joining the Saudis for sure.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
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 It's complicated.
They can have my integrity.
Paul, but are there any books you're looking forward to in the next year to reading?
No. I don't know, man. I'm not a big reader compared to many of my fellow writers. So no.
What about you, August?
I've got books I'm slowly working through. I got this book. You guys seen this book? Let me grab it.
But do you know any books coming out? Like I know. I know someone coming. I can't say that. Never mind.
What?
What? You got scoop? You got scoop?
What can't you say?
August, your friend. Fucking it's your prick. Friend that you
Steph's
had on your
book?
Left.
Steph's book?
Yeah. I don't think we're allowed to say that, are we?
But she said okay, it, she then said we can say it. Podcast. She's got a book. We can't say who or what or when or why, but it's,
let's just say, let's just
really
say it
book.
All. Who, what, when?
Let's just say it all. Yeah, that'll be good. I'm looking forward to that book. I'm trying to think books coming out this year. I feel like when I find out about new books, it's like I find out about them because they just came out. It's like I'm not like marking out like release dates on my calendar necessarily. But
would you like that to be the case?
To be like so excited for a book that I'm like,
yeah, I mean, books take like 3-4 years to like come out, but
yeah,
you think they would have more hype about like books coming out, but I guess not.
Yeah, I guess I get excited about my friends' books coming out, you know, so like that feels exciting. I'm trying to think of other friends that have books coming out.
Not like a Oh, yeah, I was going to bring this up, the pulp culture thing. It's not like big movies coming out. Everyone's waiting for it. So how do you guys feel about the post-pop thing that Wallace brought up on the podcast?
Oh, boy, let's get into it.
Yes.
The thing is that we're going to talk about it. Yes. I'm going to talk about it on multiple podcasts, and then I'm not going to do it, and everybody's going to go, what happened to the post-pop thing?
Yeah. Who's lined up for the first issue?
Yeah,
I have done like exactly zero so far in terms of putting it together. Other than I did secure the domain for it.
You should print it on a newspaper print.
I don't think I'd print it at all. I think it would be strictly online. Nah, you know. One of my ideas for it. One thing I really want to bring back is like a comment section on, like in the old days, everybody did Tumblr-based lit mags, and then there were you could comment on them, and so people would be like, "This is good" or "This sucks," maybe. And I think that's great, man. And sometimes the writer could then jump in the comments and get involved.
I'm pro comment section. I think that's a great idea. Yeah. But I feel like so many comment sections are it's just like a WordPress, and then it's like got the built-in commenting thing. Like I want something more unique than something that's so obviously just like a pre-made platform. I'm sorry I'm saying I want this for something that you're doing. I just want this in general. But
what do you mean? How do you mean?
How do I even explain this? Like I'm kind of like against like the platformification of everything. Like I wish everyone just like made their own websites like from scratch and stuff. And I hate that all of like comment sections right now are usually like WordPress comment sections, or they're that one service called Discus, like DISQUS or something. It kind of flattens everything to look the same. Like I don't know what it would take to like comment or to code out your own little comment section, but it's just like broadly I hate it when I go to a website and it's like this is obviously a WordPress website. I don't even hate WordPress. I've used WordPress a lot. My website is actually running on the back end of WordPress, but I did a lot of work to make sure it doesn't look like it's WordPress.
You hate templates.
I hate templates, and I wish the internet – I feel like the internet is, like, trending in that direction constantly, and I'm against, like, all these platforms. I just wish everyone, like, made their own weird websites.
Like, art within the website.
Sure. It doesn't even have to be arty. It just has to be unique. You know what I'm saying? So
I actually think Tumblr was a great platform for lit mags because you could comment, you could like, right? Like no lit mags even have a like feature as far as I know anymore.
Yeah.
You can't express, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
And then you could re-tumble. So, you know, you could share it with your followers if you thought
that's
it was
true.
Good. I mean, those are three awesome features. Comment, like, re-tumble on any piece of literature in the magazine. That's cool.
You should start a new Tumblr.
Do it through Tumblr, you said, Tyler?
Yeah, start a new Tumblr for your lit mag.
Like, start. Oh yeah, just like make it, put it on Tumblr.
No, just recreate the Tumblr website and then
Wallace lit mag. Waller.
Yeah.
Waller.
No E, just like
W A L L R. That's pretty good.
Barker.
Oh, Barker. Yeah.
Barker, that could be good too.
The
That's
bark.
Good.
Yeah. Rebarking,
rebark.
Yeah, every time you post something, you bark it.
There was a thing for a while. There was a competitor. It's like kind of a silly competitor to Twitter called Woofer. Do you guys remember that? And it instead of having a character maximum, it had a character minimum or something like that. Like all of the woofs had to be like, you know, 400 characters or more or something. It was, I don't think it was serious, but it worked. It was like real. I don't know what happened to it.
R.I.P. Woofer.
I can't even remember if that's what
so
it was
how
called.
Do you guys feel about the philosophy of post-pop?
I love it.
Well, it's not really a philosophy. It's because like Wallace is like, you know, people got to interpret it. It's more of a
it's provocation.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what is your interpretation of post-pop, August?
I guess I would say that, well, it's kind of confusing. It's hard. Well, it's kind of hard. It's like you got to kind of like twist it around a lot in your mind, because if something is like if Wallace was saying, and for those who are listening, this is something Wallace talked about in his interview episode of Lo-Fi Lit, so go back and listen to that.
Go back and listen.
I'm doing the work for you guys right now.
Yeah, go back and listen.
You
Stop here.
Go back and,
go
listen.
Back and listen.
Stop here, right here. It's not going to make any damn sense. So Wallace was talking about, dominant form or mode, maybe, of art has been pop, right? Like, maybe ever since, like, Warhol or whatever. And what pop is like essentially writing with the desire to entertain and please your audience, perhaps that writing with an audience in mind, maybe. I don't know. Was that what you said? Something along those lines?
Yeah, yeah. I would say like one feature of pop is a certain like self awareness and even like self referential, like referencing the self. You know. Pop artifacts almost always you get the sense as in somebody who's consuming it that the creator sort of is like self-aware, like there's like a meta thing between the audience. You could call it irony almost, but it's not really irony. It's like if you look at like pre-pop writing, it's very sincere, almost to the point where it can be sort of embarrassing or not embarrassing, but it just seems like quaint, maybe, you know, where pop ushered in this, like, the narrator or the creator is almost always sort of hip to what's going on, knows, you know, they're talking to an audience who is thinking about it in a certain way, so, you know, self-aware. That's one piece of it, but, you know, pop is hard to define. I think part of the problem is we're so immersed in it. It's like the fish in water problem. You don't know your way.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. So which makes it hard to like conceptualize what post pop would be. Like, would that be something that is like so okay, have you guys ever heard of like xenopoetics?
No. What is
xenopoetics,
that?
Xenopoetics,
aliens?
It's really kind of. It's like this really niche like theorized thing by this woman named her last name is like Ireland or something like that. She's from Australia. Anyway, her idea is like a form of poetics that is like not even possible for humans to read. Like, you know, creating like some sort of bot that creates like 10 billion sonnets or something, you know, or like creating texts that are like maybe intended for like future intelligent beings to interpret as opposed to humans, or poems that aren't able to be read, or like all of these sort of ideas. So like my first thought of post pop is like something like that, like something that is like reacting to the awareness of the audience by making things that not even the audience could possibly, hi Merlin, not even the audience could possibly even begin to take meaning out of.
You got to listen to my interview with John Treffy from Inside the Castle, because he just came out with a book that sounds something like that you were describing in the episode I was interviewing you on.
Yeah, I'll check it out for sure. And I think what August is talking about is, that's one way, but
yeah,
there's lots of ways.
It's very similar to that book that he just made. He had been working on it for like 8 years, and it was just talking about like every, like the font and the words and the letters are like different, and everyone's going to have a different interpretation of the text and have a different experience.
It kind of reminds me what you were talking about, Augie. Kind of reminds me of, man, there's that poet who, he's kind of popular with the New Yorker crowd, who does like wacky stuff, like he'll publish like train tables as a poem or like crimes. I can't remember. He did one.
Kenneth
thing
with, Goldsmith.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. That's, some of this stuff sounds a little bit like his, you know, his territory a little bit. But.
Yeah, I can totally see that link. It's like the thing I'm talking about is like maybe his idea is taken to like an extreme or something. But yeah.
Paul, what's your interpretation of post-pop?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I guess like my read on pop is like it's trying to turn the reader on. And post-pop, post-pop isn't trying to turn the reader on. But what that looks like could be kind of anything. And
but then isn't it aware of the reader if they're trying to not turn the reader on?
It's still, well, pop? Yeah, I mean, That's a fair question, but I mean, I don't know. I was reading the unabridged journals of Sylvia Plath, and it's just this chick like writing about her fucking boring ass days as like a somewhat bougie person. She's like a brilliant writer, so it excites you to read it, but like it feels so like guileless and like boring, like just narrating her random fucking days and like her fucking weird feelings about people that she knows that I have no clue about, like it isn't quite like post-pop, but it feels like more post-pop than like her poems, which are like just complete fucking bangers that light your head on fire, you know what I mean? And me and Wallace were talking a bit about Tao Lin as sort of like a case in the pop post-pop like continuum or whatever, and like I think about like his In Taipei, there's a section where he like narrates a fight that he had with Zach German, and it was like on HTML Giant comment or maybe in his website, he like had that story written in a much more like belabored and detailed and like fucking like just like specific version of that, and then the version of it that was in Taipei was much more like quick and kind of like got to all the main beats but like didn't go into it as deeply. And the more specific web commenty version of it, which you could probably find on like an archive site or something, that feels more post-pop to me, whereas the version in Taipei feels more pop to me. So it's like, I don't know. And I guess the other thing I think of with pop and post-pop is like, it's like when I get keyed in on an artist and I find like the 17 different versions of their web presence, and it's like Wallace's third Tumblr, like Wallace's like Flickr page, like you can just find all this like detritus of people that just like is out there. It's sort of extant and it exists, and that feels kind of post-pop because it's like part of their creative self, but it's not like they're not executing it to. I mean, part of it is they are executing it to like theoretically maybe to excite someone at some point, but like also it's kind of like forgotten or like. It's just like randomly there or whatever, like ambition was never actually realized and it just kind of like fizzled or something. So I don't know, maybe that's a word, like something that's just kind of fizzled. Because we have so much expressive capacity in this time with the internet and all this digital technology and shit that it's kind of extraordinary, but like the stuff that we just generate but don't make anything out of, that feels kind of like fertile post-pop territory perhaps, as opposed to the stuff that we generate and are trying to like make something exciting out of.
I totally agree with that. I think one aspect of pop is it's packaged for consumption. It's put into a tiny little package so you can digest it. It's the 2.5 minute song. It's the 5 stanza poem. It's the, you know, 2-page short story or shorter, 90-minute movie, you know. That not pop doesn't have to be that, but that's certainly a feature of pop, is to make it very digestible and easy.
I mean,
whereas
I feel like
Paul
now,
talks
though,
about is
I feel
like
now movies are like 3 hours, though. They're not even 90 minutes anymore. Because it's popular. It's more.
There's still 90-minute movies.
Not like new ones. The hit ones that are coming out, they're like two hours and 30 minutes or 3 hours.
I feel like Anora was like a 90-minute movie.
But yeah, you had to specifically long. Think of it, though.
No, that was a 2-hour, 20-minute movie. Never mind.
I think 90 minutes could be post-pop.
I really like this idea of the detritus, because it is, there's like something funny about like, it could be just something you're getting to know, or maybe an artist you're interested in. You're like finding their old like abandoned blogs, and there's something kind of embarrassing. Like there's something about that that's like I have that shit all over the internet, and like I kind of don't want people to find that. I don't want to go through the effort of like trying to get rid of it, but like maybe there's an element to post pop that's like these, yeah, like these failed ambitions that
on the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, these things that you don't want people to find. Maybe at one time you created with a pop mindset, and now that they're abandoned, they're embarrassing, and they're post-pop.
Maybe like a post-pop magazine could only exist on the Wayback Machine. Like you create it and then delete it. After.
The Wayback Machine as a platform.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Like a separate internet.
Yeah. That's a great idea. I don't know how that would work, but it's a great idea.
I don't either.
Well, let's do it, guys. Postpop.com. Didn't you buy postpop.com, Wallace, or org or something?
Postpop Lit. Postpop is
Postpop
Lit.
Lit.
Yeah.
Postpop Lit.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Yeah. But yeah, no, at the same time, one of the most important parts of it for me, it's like what Paul said earlier, that's a provocation. It's like, I'm not here to tell anyone what's post-pop, what it means. It's just something to think about. And to kind of direct your, like, there's a part of me that feels like we almost can't, you know, pop is a way that our brains are wired. So to get around it, you have to sort of like, you know, I don't know if we can do it. And so I don't have the answers at all. I only have the question, but I think it'd be a fun thing to have writers try to do. And that's, you know, like we talked about, Tyler, on the last time you and I talked, I just think it's cool to have a lit mag that has some kind of idea about moving literature forward, or it doesn't have to, actually, a lit mag doesn't have to move literature forward. You could have a lit mag that does, like, you know, backwards. 18th century sonnets. That's fine. But the point is, a lit mag that has
Paul's
an idea.
Paul's shaking his head. He says no.
I'm just joking. That's a joking shake.
Oh, okay. Continue.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, you keep going, Wallace.
No, that's it. I just so I just want there to be an animating idea for any lit mag. I want to do a lit mag that tries to you know, do something interesting that there's a reason to read it beyond most lit mags, it's like, yeah, you'll read it if you've heard of the writer or you like them and you just happen to notice they published something there. But the lit mag's irrelevant. Itself is irrelevant. You don't care. If you like a certain writer and they publish in this or that mag, the mag doesn't matter. You're just clicking it to the writer, which is fine. But it would be cool to have a mag where people read it because they're interested in what it's trying to do, you know?
Yeah. It's like you want stakes. You want skin in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Taco Bell Quarterly?
I don't read it.
Okay. Do you guys read Taco Bell Quarterly? I feel like it's very pop. It's very pop-based.
That would be pop, definitely. I don't know. I don't even know if I've been. It's just like a Twitter account that I've seen. Okay. I don't think I've ever been to their website.
I feel like so, Wallace, who are you going to bring on as a? If you could hypothetically, you have this magazine, you have all the money in the world. Who are you bringing on? They will agree with you. They will agree to come on. You have all the money in the world. You can choose any team. Who do you bring on?
What do you mean, to work on the mag or to write for it?
To either.
So to work on the mag, I've given this a lot of thought, and I kind of don't want anyone. I kind of want to do it myself because, you know, the lit game is so, like, quid pro quo and everything, and anybody who gets involved will want to try to get their friends in the mag, you know, and not that it's going to be some, you know, amazing, you know, thing to get in the mag, but I just don't want to be influenced at all by sort of, like, favors for people. Mm-hmm. I want it to be really just sort of the writers that I would want to read and everything, so... So in terms of, like, the team, and also I want it to be, it's not going to be a super involved thing because there's no slush pile, it's solicitations only, so I don't need teams of people to read through stuff, and I only want to put out, like, one per quarter, like, seasonal, winter, spring,
summer. But do you feel like that's gatekeeping, to not have, like, open submissions?
Well, yes, but isn't, I mean, you know, if you just want to read random stuff with no curation, you could, you know, you could just randomly go around.
But you're, what if you're looking for the best stuff? And that you don't, they're not your friend, though. You don't know them.
That's my point, is I want to publish people who I think are really good writers without any, like, allegiances in terms of, you know.
But wouldn't that be, they're not allegiances if you open it up to all submissions? If you're only selecting the people you know and you're soliciting them, then you are selecting people that you know.
Either way, it's gatekeeping, because even if you do open submissions, you're still, you're not letting everyone
that's
in.
That's true.
It's just how big of a gate. And how, where do you put the gate, I guess? What is the gate made out of?
Yeah, I know. There's no gate.
You know? Is it made out of wood? Is it made out of stone? Sandstone?
Well, part of it is, yeah, like, I just want, part of it is I want to do it myself. So if I had, like, a big slush pile, it would just be, I couldn't. There's no way.
Yeah, I know.
And two, yeah, I kind of, like, already know the writers. I want to see in it. I don't know. You know, PHC, there was a lot of discourse about this in the old days of Alt Lit about, you know, publishing friends and is that good or bad? I think there were even some, like, sort of manifestos about why it's good to publish friends. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm building a community, you know, versus giving everybody a shot and all that. And so, and gatekeeping versus not gatekeeping and all that. And so I'm curious, Paul, where you fall on all that, like, is it bad to publish your friends?
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's like, it's fine. But I do think that I've had fun in my life publishing fucking randos who I know nothing about, but I have no relationship to whatsoever, and removing my editorial views from the equation and just, like, truly trying to create a neutral publishing platform where it's just like, you send something, we'll publish it. Might not publish everything. You know what I mean? And, like, I don't know. Like, I think most people, I don't really care if they like a fucking piece of writing or not. Like, it's a small percentage of people who, like, have a specific taste or vision in literature that's going to, like, excite me or interest me or intrigue me or whatever. I think a lot of people that get into the mag game, they have a hyperinflated sense of the value of their own taste. Like, true. I don't give a fuck what, like, random person likes or doesn't like in terms of poems. Like, maybe I like the poems that they like, maybe I won't. There's probably, like, honestly zero correlation between their likelihood of liking a poem and my likelihood of liking a poem. So like, that's one piece, is like, just take your own, like, I think that's a provocation that I'm interested in. It's just like, who the fuck cares if you like something or not? Like, that just feels like such a boring bar to cross. Like, obviously it's, like, intuitive and it makes sense and, like, it's kind of stupid and, like, contrarian to say otherwise, but, like, It's fun, actually, to be like, what if I publish stuff that I don't like as well as stuff that I do like? And, like, what stuff that I don't like turns people on more than the stuff that I do like? Like, is that possible? Like, opening yourself up to those possibilities, I think, is worthwhile. On the other side, though, like, with the, is it cool to publish your friends or whatever? Like, I think you just got to be honest about what you're doing. Like, that's my thing. I feel like people try to, they will have it both ways, where it's just like, they're not willing to just be like, yeah, I just publish people I know and that's it. I don't know, like, I've done a lot of stuff that's, like, very social, and but just publishing friends and people in my community just is almost like a, I don't know, just like, it's kind of like the only option. It's just like, this is the only thing you can do. I think that's, like, a fun thing to do if it's just like you're doing it for the people in your world. But once it starts to become, like, this clout-generating thing, it starts to get, I don't know, just gross to me, and I hate it or something. So it's like, what are friends, you know? And then it gets into these, like, because that's the thing, is it's like, I see people online who are like, yeah, this is my friend. And it's like, have you ever eaten a fucking burger together? Like, have you ever, like, fucking, like, literally done anything together in your entire life? And, like, I see people talk about each other as other best friends, and they've literally spent time together maybe once, maybe twice. And it's, like, pathetic. It pisses me off. I think it fucking sucks. So, like, the whole, like, idea of friendship in the digital space is very fraught and weird and upsetting and strange and scary, honestly. So I don't know, like, but yeah, if it's a thing where you're just publishing people that you love because you love them, I think that's beautiful. But yeah, I think it's also cool to, I don't know, there's no answer. Everything is fraught, everything is fucked, and trying to go in the other direction, you're gonna hit just as many traps.
But the publishing things that you don't like, does the story or the writing still have to meet a certain criteria for you to publish it?
I mean, I've done things where it doesn't.
Oh, okay.
And that's been interesting to me.
Are you talking about the love book, or is that something you're thinking of?
Yeah, mostly, yeah.
What's the love book?
It was just a thing we put out, like, for 4 years or something, 3 years, where anyone could send something in, and we'd publish it. And there was, like, two exceptions where we didn't publish things, but everything that we got sent, we published. And the only thing was, like, send us a love poem or, like, a piece of love writing.
Cute. How well was that received?
It was very well received. It became, like, bigger and bigger and bigger. But that was the downside of it, is eventually it became unsustainable. Whereas, like, by the final one, it was, like, and I think you've seen it, Tyler, it's, like, a, or maybe you haven't, I don't know. It's, like, it was, like, a six-volume, like, chapbook set that was, like, a real undertaking that was, like, quite stressful for the people in my community who put in the physical labor of putting it together. But yeah, the editorial process is really fun and beautiful and cool. And it's just like, this poem that I think sucks, we're putting it in there. Where can we put it that feels like makes it pop or shine or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're deciding to publish things that don't light your hair on fire, how can you, like, place it in a way that feels like it brings the most out of it or whatever? It just opens up a bunch of interesting questions.
But do you think people read magazines from, like, front to back and, like, looking for, like, a juxtaposition between two stories? Or do only editors do that?
You're correct. No one reads magazines from front to back. But part of what we did with that is we didn't have a...
I still think, though, that's a cool way
to... We didn't have a table of contents. There was no, like... Oh. You couldn't see who was in the magazine except by flipping through it.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of, like, a fun, subversive bullshit thing we did where it was, like... You can just look up your and your friends' names and flip to them and then just, like, ignore everything else. Mm-hmm. To see what was in the magazine, you actually had to flip through the magazine, which is kind of cool, I thought. I like that. It was, like, a thing.
So, Wallace, if you did this post-pop magazine, are you just going to have... Is it only going to be stories? Or are you going to have more stuff? Do you think a magazine nowadays should have more than just literary content, I guess? I don't know.
Well, it's a lit mag, so, you know, I would want it to be writing. Now, I don't think part of post-pop probably is maybe playing with the boundaries of a story or a poem or whatever. So I feel like that's part of it is, you know, whatever format. The format shouldn't be too restrictive.
I was thinking, could a magazine exist, like, solely on YouTube? I don't even know how that would, like, how that form would even work. It's a weird question.
That's a weird question. I don't know what that would look like. But it's
like TikTok or something. Because I feel like...
Just like video art.
Yeah, it could exist.
Or if you had the text on the screen and someone was reading it, I don't know.
I kind of like that idea of just like issue one and it's like a half hour long YouTube video and it's just like 5 minutes for each piece, but it's just like displays the piece on the video and it's just up. You read it and then you click to the next one, but it's a YouTube video. That's so stupid, but I think it would be great. I'd love to see it.
I guess I think more people should be integrating YouTube into their literary pursuits.
Yeah, but don't...
Maybe because it's popular, but...
Wouldn't it be TikTok now, though? Like,
because
that
TikTok's
be the
banned.
Not
yet.
Yeah,
Trump's saving it.
Oh, he is?
Trump's saving TikTok.
I think it'll be fine.
Okay. It's just crazy they could ban a website.
I do think that, though, like, I would want it to be like literature, it. Writing, reading.
Yeah.
You know, that's important to me. At the end of the day, that's what I care about is literature. I'm not trying to like create a new art form. I just want to create a new path in literature or, you know, I wouldn't be creating it. I would be creating a place where others could create it. But,
I was thinking of a poem. If like you printed out t-shirts with each word on a t-shirt and you put them in like put people in a race and like you could see the poem as people were running by.
I love that idea. That's
and like that's the beautiful. Order of the runners would determine the order of the words.
Yeah.
Tyler, why aren't you for that conceptual avant-garde post-pop literary?
I don't have the money for that.